can show ya. Put the pussy on ya, like I told ya. Give me all your numbers so I can phone ya. Your girl act the stank, then call me over. Not on the bed, lay me on your sofa. Call before you come, I need to shave my chocha. You do what you don't, or you will, I won't ya. Go downtown and eat it like a vulture. See my hips and my tips, so cha. See my ass and my lips, don't cha. Lost a few pounds in my whips, for ya. This the kind of beat that go ba-ta-ta. Ba-ta-ta-ta, ta-ta-ta-ta-ta. Sex me so good, I say blah, blah, blah. Work it, I need a glass of water. Boy, yo, oh boy, it's good to know ya.
Is it worth it? Let me work it. I put my thing down, flip it and reverse it. It's your primitive, it's wet and yet. It's your primitive, it's wet and yet. If you got a big, let me search it. To find out how hard I gotta work, yeah. It's your primitive, it's wet and yet. It's your primitive, it's wet and yet.
If you're a fly gal, get your nails done. Get a pedicure, get your hair did. Boy, lift it up, let's make a toaster. Let's get drunk, it's gonna bring us closer. Don't I look like a Halle Berry poster? See the Belvedere playing tricks on ya. Girlfriend wanna be like me, never. You won't find a bitch that's even better. I make you hot as Las Vegas weather. Listen up close while I take it backwards.
Okay, begins the gallus in me, which I
want. I'm not a prostitute, but I can give you what you want. I love your braids and your mouth full of phones. Love the way my ass go, ba-boom, ba-boom, boom. Keep your eyes on my ba-boom, ba-boom. Boom, boom. You think you can handle this? Ka-donk, ka-donk, donk. Take my thong off and my ass go boom. Cut the lights on so you see what I can do.
Is it worth it? Let me work it. I put my thing down, flip it and reverse it. It's your primitive, it's wet and yet. It's your primitive, it's wet and yet. If you got a big, let me search it. To find out how hard I gotta work, yeah. It's your primitive, it's wet and yet. It's your primitive, it's wet and yet.
Boys, boys, all type of boys. Black, white, Puerto Rican, Chinese boys. White, thang, 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 thang. Black, thang, 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 thang. Girls, girls, get that cash. If it's 9 to 5, we're shaking your ass. Ain't no shame, ladies, do your thing. Just make sure you ahead of the game. Just cause I got a lot of fame, super. Prince couldn't get me, change my name, papa. Hooter can't tell you slave again, no sign. Picture Black saying, oh, yes, I'm massa. Picture Lil' Kim dating a pastor. Minute Man, Big Red can outlast ya. Who is the best? I don't have to ask ya. When I come out, you won't even matter. Why you act dumb like, duh? Say you act dumb like, duh. As the drummer boy go, brr-pum-pum. Give you some of this Cinnabon.
Is it worth it? Let me work it. I put my thing down, flip it and reverse it. It's your primitive, it's wet and yet. It's your primitive, it's wet and yet. If you got a big, let me search it. To find out how hard I gotta work, yeah. It's your primitive, it's wet and yet. It's your primitive, it's wet and yet.
Come on, super fellas.
I like the way you work that.
That would be Missy Elliott with Work It. That's, I think it's like about 15 years old now, that song, but I still remember it. It makes me feel like in my early 20s, late teens, something like that. Anyway, hi everyone. This is Sheep Up. Welcome back. I'm Yvette. And today my co-host is the, in my opinion, legendary Helen Betty Corday. So Helen's a writer, recently a psychology student, filmmaker. She's passionately feminist, pro-sex, and a lover of ancient Greek mythology. She's also a sex worker and a mother, both of which we're going to be discussing today.
Hello.
Hey, nice to see you.
Good to see you
too. It's been a little while. Well, I reckon we should just get straight into it about your being a mother and a sex worker. So yeah. Two seemingly conflicting identities. Are they?
They can be quite a thing to juggle. I definitely struggled merging, because I'm completely out as a sex worker. I'm out to my family, friends. Yeah. I use my real name for sex work as well at this point, although that's a more recent thing.
Oh, right, yes. Mm. I don't remember going back 10 yeah. years ago, you had a...
Leandra Dahl,
yeah. So what's happening with Leandra? Is she...
Well, I got to the point where I was just really committed to sex work and... reducing the stigma of sex work. And I just thought, sort of a big, like, fuck you to the stigma was to just use my name, not use a pseudonym, not feel that I needed to protect myself from the stigma or from the industry. Mm. So, and it's actually, I haven't been stalked or anything like that. Like, yeah. So it's been a good experience. But it was a, you know, when my daughter was younger, like primary school age, mm-hmm. I wasn't out at all about sex work. I really tried to keep the things separate. But then I kind of got outed because I've got a big mouth and I like to talk yes. about my opinions. Yes. And I wrote a blog about the porn industry in Victoria, Melbourne particularly. And it got picked up by the Herald Sun. And the Marnian picture yeah. was all over it. So I was like, okay, so I'm just going to own this. going to lean in. And it's been a progression from there of just stepping more and more into, yeah, being comfortable, being known as a sex worker and actually have like zero shame about it at all now.
Mm. Has that changed the nature of all the work that you do? If you are, it has.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I think now that my name is to how I market my brand as a sex worker, I am thinking like, what if family members stumble across me online?
Mm-hmm.
So there's more of a sort of, I'm very open in dialogue about sex explicitly, but my imagery is more, it's more like a tease. So it's then mm-hmm. like, you'll have to pay to see more rather yep. than here it is, come yep. get more of it. Yeah, just in case daddy comes along.
Okay, right. Yeah. Someone's
yeah.
daddy.
Yeah, well, they can come, but not my own.
So you've been a sex worker as long or before being a mother? Or as, definitely as long as being a mother?
Yeah, they right? started about the same time. So I left my marriage due to domestic violence in like 2002
mm-hmm.
and 2003 I began sex work and university, so it all happened at the same time. Mm. Soul parenting, sex work and academic study, and really have been the main and major themes and purposes of my life.
Mm. Did you find this idea yeah that it's a conflicting identities to be a sex worker and a mother, did you find that initially difficult once you fell pregnant?
Yeah, I mean, I really did. I found the identity of just being a sexual woman, like sex work aside, even before I started it, was I found hard initially to reconcile with being a mother. I remember when my daughter was first born, I started dressing like Pollyanna Doris Day for like 6 months.
Oh, wow.
Because I was just like
Pollyanna, the
you know, just sort of like a, I don't know if I'm referencing something wrong.
Yeah, I was
you know, that's just sort of really wholesome 50s
right, of course,
kind
yes.
of thing. I was like, you know, I couldn't be the sexual, and I was only 20 years old when I had my daughter. So I was like trying to throw away my sexuality immediately because I couldn't imagine that was what a mother was supposed to embody or look like. But it was so uncomfortable. The photos of me just look miserable. So I threw those clothes out and went back to, you know, the dress I'm comfortable in, which is the more, well, just a little more slutty, really. And then it's just been a constant journey of reconciling my sexuality with being a mother and realizing that they're not divergent. And the, you know, the severance of the sexual woman from the mother, that, you know, the sexless, good, martyr mother, has just been a huge disservice to all women.
Well, yeah, there's this socially acceptable vision of what a mother it looks like. And, well, actually, yeah, it's a woman who, well, basically doesn't exhibit sexual agency. We could say that maybe that's the image of what a lot of women are supposed to be, but definitely a mother, right?
Yeah, it's amplified for mothers, absolutely. Where really, if you think about, you know, if you take away the legacy of patriarchal religion and you look at what the mother archetype is, that's like fecundated sexuality. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a very, like a mother is born by sex. Like they don't exist without sex. Oh. So like they're an innately sexual archetype, so it's absurd that there's been this severance and it's disempowering for women.
Well, these religious texts planted the seed there. Yeah,
they had an agenda.
Virginal mother, yeah. Yeah. So why, before we keep continuing talking about motherhood and sexuality and sex work, why sex work for you? Like, why did you get into sex work in the first place?
Well, I was...
And why do you still do it?
I was a sole parent with not a whole lot of support, and I wanted to study, and I didn't want to be just fraught with trying to work and study and raise her. So it what it gives me more than anything is more time, because the you know, the pay is quite high, like your hourly rate for work is quite high, so it means you can work less hours, and that's like a huge advantage for me. But also, I was just innately sexual from really young age. Like, I was orgasmic before my teens, you know, was voraciously masturbating through my teens, and I was fascinated by sex, so it made total sense to make that a career choice as well. And a delight. Like, I have an awful lot of fun.
Yeah. Do you think, so going back to motherhood and being a sex worker, do you think the stigma, so I mean, the stigma for a sex worker, even when she doesn't have children, is really harsh, but to be a mother and a sex worker, I can imagine this, the stigma would be outrageous.
It's got a different flavor, and it can go both ways. So in some ways people can allow you, and it's still that sort of paternalist pitying thing, to justify your sex career because you're a mum, you know, like, oh, you know, she's doing it for her kids, poor her, kind of thing, which is also stigma, just another version of it, rather than that outright you're repugnant because you're a sex worker stigma. But yeah, there's an element of, you know, how is this going to impact your children that you work in commercial sex? And it's like, well, how would any work, you know, how would a woman working in the armed services or the police force, or, you know, these things that engage, or in maybe boxing, or, you know, something with violence that's part of it, where you're going to have to carefully engage with your children about how you talk about your work what happens in your work. Yeah.
Yeah. No one's asking boxers, are they? How do you, do you have children? Is this responsible for you to be
what messages are you sending your kids?
Is that something you think, I can't imagine, if maybe that's a difference between having, so your daughter, you have a daughter, when we talk about you being a mother, is a daughter that you have. I wonder if you would get asked the question more, or think about your children, think about your children. Does it happen more if you, I wonder if it happens more if you have a daughter versus a son. Well, think about what the messages that your daughter's going to receive versus your son. Do you think that's something that happens?
I think you get different questions. There's a lot of, when a sex worker has a son, and I have some friends that do, there's that sense of he's going, you know, the flavor of bullying he's going to get from his peers, like his male peers, about, you know, the mum being a sex worker, you know, and that idea that you're maybe going to warp his sexuality because you're a sexual being, presuming that he's a heterosexual son, that is. Okay. Whereas I think with girls, it's that idea that you'll have somehow encouraged them to be hypersexual or overly sexual because of your career in sex, and that will make them a victim, you know, or prone to, you know, making impulsive choices about sex. And, but, you know, all teenagers do. A lot of them do.
All teenagers have what?
Have impulsive decisions about sex.
Right.
It's not really related to what jobs their parents are doing. It's their hormones.
So it's the nature of the questions will be different about what we, and but that's a, do you think the reason for that is that we think about, well, obviously we do, we think about sex, they're different things to girls and guys.
Yeah, and I think we position women in a victim role when we talk about sexuality. And there's, you know, there's discourse around the sexual violence that's prevalent in our culture, but it's disempowering to suggest that women can't be, you know, sexual instigators, or, you know, fully enjoy their sexuality or be promiscuous in a way that is just expected of men. It's just normal. You don't even use the word promiscuous about male sexuality. You're just like,
no, never.
He is a man and he likes sex. And that is true of us too.
Yeah, it's tautology, I guess.
Yeah.
Men and sex. But also, I think people don't understand, Queenie and I were talking about this a couple of weeks ago on the show. I don't think people understand sex work very well, or they don't. Correction, they don't understand, they it's a special type of person that does sex work, that these aren't people just walking amongst you every day. I thought it was interesting, I was reading a couple of weeks ago, a mother talking about being a sex worker, and she mentioned that Maya Angelou, the celebrated poet, she's deceased now, I think.
Yeah,
she passed a couple of years ago. Yeah, civil rights activist, and I mean, Oprah just has been quoting her entire career, right?
Oh, she's brilliant.
Yeah. Maya Angelou worked as a sex worker, And she spoke about it sort of later in her career, I think, because she wanted to send the message that, you know, it's not, we don't want young people to think that this is something that they need to be ashamed of, or sexuality, their sexuality in general.
No, and it's often excluded from bios about her, which I think she objected to, yeah.
Yeah, why do you think that is? I mean, is it hard for us as a society to continue to respect Maya Angelou if we know that she worked as a sex worker? Is that...
I think there's this idea that, you know, if once people exit the industry, that they probably want no one to ever know about it again, which once was a safety concern, perhaps, and also about respect, because it is, you know, people do tend to show less respect for women who've worked in the sex industry, and people want to distance themselves from that. But that's, you know, we're moving away from that, and I think we need to understand that people are plural and nuanced, and they have, you know, complicated life journeys, and we need to be able to understand people's full humanity. And the issue with sex work and people's unfamiliarity with it is its representation in the media. There's just too many, you know, the stereotypes that are represented in movies and TV shows really need to come a lot further, a bit more realistic. It's always, the destitute woman leaning in a car window kind of thing, and there's nothing that is a part of the sex work story, and street workers definitely deserve our respect as well and to be free of stigma, but it's just one image and it's used constantly to sort of batter all sex workers with.
Do you think this comes from the ever popular Madonna whore complex? Yeah. I think it's probably like the only theory of Freud's that I think Dicks. Still holds water, right? I can't think of any. Or maybe he's had a couple of the Oedipal complex or something like that. But, yeah, the Madonna whore complex, it does prevail, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. Like, we get conflicted. And I think that, you know, a huge shift in human sexuality came with contraception. And so, we've seen new paradigms being, you know, moulded and sculpted for female sexuality particularly. You know, but before that, shame was what was used to really control who people were having children with, and trying to keep that within marriage and in sort of some kind of structure that felt safe for women and children. And it may have served children and women a long, long time ago. But now we have a lot more control over when we give birth and how we give birth and if we ever want to have children.
Right.
And so we no longer need those structures, you know, that were put in place by shame culture to control sexuality and create family environments, because we have total control over our fertility now.
As we should.
Yes.
I'm going to play a couple of CSAs and we're going to come back and continue talking about this. I want to ask you about what you wanted your daughter to know about sex work. But we'll get to that after these. I'm going to call them messages. It's better than saying CSAs, I think.
Surprise, surprise. It's a show about kid stuff.
What sort of kid stuff?
All sorts of kid stuff.
I'm Carl Panuzzo.
And I'm Daniel Salvatore Christopher Larkins Panuzzo.
And we are...
playing the platters that matter.
Spinning the discs with a twist.
Talking the job that will keep you alive. To make sure you really exist. Every Thursday...
from 3:30 till 4.
Right here on 3CR.
855 on your AM dial.
We have giveaways and question time.
It'll need you to SMS your favourite line.
So tune in to find out what's going on in our world.
On Dinosaur Prize Surprise. Surprise.
In 2016, 3CR published a book to celebrate the station's 40th birthday.
Years in the making, Radical Radio, celebrating 40 years of 3CR, is a visually stunning account of the people and ideas that make up this dynamic station.
At 300 pages, the book includes hundreds of images and over 50 features on programs, people, music and technology from across the decades.
3CR's Radical Radio book is now on sale for just $30. $20.
You can get your copy of 3CR's book at the station during business hours at 21 Smith Street, Fitzroy.
Or online at 3cr.org.au/shop.
Get a piece of your own history.
On sale for just $30.
3CR's Radical Radio is available now.
CR is a community radio licence holder. What you hear on community radio is governed by the Community Radio Codes of Practice. The Codes of Practice cover matters relating to program content, including local content, news, current affairs, Australian music, programs for children, and the responsibilities associated with broadcasting by and for the community. They also cover aspects such as community access and participation in the operation of this station. Copies of the code are available from the 3CR website. Go to 3cr.org.au/who we are.
Okay, we're back. It's 10:22. You're listening to She Bop on 3CR with Yvette and Helen.
Hello.
Hey. Okay, so before we went to the little break, what is it like, to raise a teenage daughter while you're working as a sex worker? And second question, I guess, what did you want her to know about sex work?
Yeah, it's been tricky, especially being out as a sex worker, raising a teenage daughter. So she got a lot of, there's more funny stories. Like, I think every time she ever walked in to a room of a certain group of teenage boys, they'd sing that song, Stacey's Mum.
Oh, my God.
Okay. She was just like, I never want to hear that song again.
And I'm going to have to play that on the top. We're on the end of the show. I'm sorry. I'm going to have to play that. I don't even know who it's by the way.
No, neither do I.
But, yeah.
I hadn't heard of it till she told me it was, like, now, like, the theme song following her around every teenage party.
Stacey's Mum. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. But, yeah.
And I got like prank calls from some of the boys at school. They pretended they were calling me from Pornhub. And they were like, we're calling you about another job for Pornhub.
Oh my God.
It's like, I think you misunderstand how Pornhub works.
Yeah.
And also, is Wait, that you, yeah. Angus?
Hell yeah.
And they just like, hangs up giggling. But there there are other like harder parts, challenging parts where she felt a little ostracized or slut shamed.
Mm.
Which is tricky for her, and just uncomfortable with boys talking about, wanting to have sex with her mum and things like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty uncomfortable moments for her, but we're really open. We've been able to talk it all through. She gets lots of support. She doesn't have to feel like, afraid to say to me when she's frustrated with it and it impacts on her. But so many women in my life are in the sex industry in one form or other. So she's also got lots of like auntie figures that she can go to when she needs to have a real bitch about mum.
Okay, yeah.
And I encourage that, we all need to complain about our parents. Like we're always...
Well, any teenage daughter's going to need to do
that. Yeah. But the benefit has been, I've done loads of work with boundaries and asking for what you want and like good sexual communication. Like sex workers are experts on that stuff, which I've just been able to pass on to her, and also comfort with her own sexual pleasure. So when she was ready, she was like, I want a vibrator. She wasn't afraid to have that conversation with me. So we went sex toy shopping.
How old was she when she said that to you?
I think she was 16. So okay. It wasn't like super young. Mm-hmm. And for a long time, we talked about how getting to know your own body's pleasure was really important before you embark on, interactive sexuality with other people, so that you know what you want and you've got that sort of sexual confidence that makes it easier to express boundaries and desires. Mm. It was like encouraging masturbation most of her life, because I could see she was sexual like her mother was, but to keep it private and get to know your body until you're ready to share that. So there's been lots of benefits for her as well. Oh, and I also did like sex education panels at her high school.
Yes. yeah. So we won't have the time to go into all that, but obviously you were an advocate for the Safe Schools program.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I remember you did that. That was a couple of years ago now?
Yeah, it was. But she would have been in year 10, year 9 and year 10. Mm. We ran them, and it was, we just would bring in a panel of experts. We had experts on porn, the impacts of porn. We had we had Australia's Porn Star of the Year come and talk about how the sex she does on camera is entertainment stunt sex, like seeing a car chase in a movie. It's not that's not how you should drive a car. That's not how you should have sex with a girlfriend.
Well, yeah, if that's...
Unless she really wants that.
Right. Yeah, if that's a child's primary source of sex education, then
So it was just to dispel that. You know, porn wasn't meant to be sex education. It's inadvertently taken up the gaps in our sex ed that we're offering kids. And so that panel particularly was to address that issue. And because we had a porn star on the panel, because they were opt-in panels after school hours, there was a big turnout for that panel.
Okay. Yeah, I can imagine.
So it was good.
Yeah. And mums and dads showed up that day.
Mums and dads and lots of school kids. Yeah. Lots of teenage boys and girls were out there. And it was great because we had women there who'd been teaching sex ed for years who had just said they'd been saying this stuff themselves, but they'd just see the kids' eyes glaze over, be like, what do you know? But to have, you know, a woman there who works in the industry, who they were quite attentive to, giving that information just really made it sink in a lot more.
Mm.
And it was great to see the kids sort of alive with questions about sex and sexuality and, you know, feeling comfortable to ask about the porn they have seen and the reactions they've had to it, where they've been sort of...
Did they feel open to
to do that? After the panels, they would be so much more talkative. There were conversations we were having with, particularly with my friends who had teenage sons. Suddenly the sons were asking them questions. They're like, oh, my mum was in that room with me. This is not a totally taboo topic that I can't discuss with my parent.
Mm.
And to see parents laughing and engaging in conversations about it was really broke down some barriers between parents and kids and teachers and kids about these topics that are so vital to their sexual well-being and development.
Mm. Well, before we head out of here, I don't know, we'll try to keep it, if we can, a brief answer, but what did you really want your daughter to know about sex work or being a sex worker?
Well, primarily that, you know, there's a plurality of stories in the sex industry and that the hierarchy that people have, like a whole high-class escort is like an acceptable kind of sex worker and a street worker isn't, that stuff is bullshit and, you know, all part of the same stigma that is a disservice to all women in the industry.
Mm.
But also, you know, that... it's not something she should be afraid of if she wants to engage with commercial sex, but it's, you know, you can research and build community and get mentoring and all this stuff. You don't have to go in blind and nervous and, you know, just like this vulnerable fresh meat, which is happens to so many people because of stigma, that people enter the industry in total isolation and unsupported. Mm-hmm. And it's really dangerous that way. So when we remove the stigma, so some of her friends are interested in joining the industry and I was able to direct them towards mentors closer to their age. I felt a little uncomfortable about doing it myself, so I opted out. You know, and that could really guide them and help them and make sure that their entry was as safe as possible.
Mm.
And you know, just fully informed. And the peer education within sex work communities about all aspects of sexuality is just way above community standards of what's understood about sexualities. And, you know, you know, they've been at the cutting edge of things like STI prevention and AIDS prevention, you know, for 20 years now. Like, the sex workers have collaborated with public health for such a long time in Australia that, like, all of this stuff. There's so much to talk about.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of, I think we're going to have you back regularly because there's just so much to talk about. But we're pretty much out of here. I was going to play like a snippet of the Stacey's Mom song on the way out because I seriously haven't. I don't think I've ever heard it.
I listened to it once my daughter told me about it and I was like, yeah, I can get how this is one funny but also really annoying.
Right. Yeah. Oh, maybe tell her not to listen to today's show. But thanks for being with me, Helen. And
thanks
we're out of here.
Me.
Thanks for listening, guys. And I'll speak to you guys next week.
That's the one.
Fountains of flame. Deborah, I'm high. Thanks, Helen.
You're welcome.
Oh, Stacey's mom.